You're listening to Sportsnet Today on the official home of your Calgary Flames. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
It is a wild time in the sports world, not just the hockey. We kind of talked about that Toronto team in the first hour. But basketball is coming up in a big-time way, and we had a big game north of the city up in Edmonton. Here to talk about that and a whole lot more from Sportsnet.ca, it is the incredibly talented Haley McGoldrick. Haley, how are you today?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you very much. We had the WNBA back in Canada for a preseason game yesterday, or over the weekend, sorry, up in Edmonton. It's like over 16,000 fans, seemed like there was a buzz about it. It was all over social media. It is a matter of when, not if, Canada gets a WNBA team, right?
I would hope so. You're seeing that in consecutive years you're having thousands of people going out to watch the WNBA, and I think it's one thing with Toronto because, you know, Toronto is whatever, and I'm sure people from the States had driven up for that game, but Edmonton, that's certainly a different market that's not as easily accessible, and you're still seeing, like you said, over 16,000 people going to Edmonton to watch that game, and you're seeing now that the Golden State Warriors were awarded a franchise 13th WNBA team, and they've already had over 7,000 ticket deposits for season tickets. It's just incredible, and I know that Canada would do the exact same thing. So I believe it is when, not if, as well. But I don't know if that means they're definitively going to be that 14th team, or it might still take a few years. Because Kathy Engelbert has said it's not just about a market that wants it, because we know that Canada wants a professional women's basketball team. But it is also about having the correct facilities, having the correct manager, being there for the long term. You don't want a team that's going to start up and then have to move and all of that kind of stuff. But I do believe it is a when, not if, yes.
And with all due respect to the city, and look, I think basketball is more popular out here than people give it credit for, but we're not out here in Alberta exactly known for our baller culture. But I feel like the one out in Edmonton was almost a, look, if we can make it work here, we can make it work anywhere. Just give us a team already.
Yeah, a little bit. Although I will say I do need to give Edmonton credit, at least in the women's basketball side. They are the home of the Canadian senior women's national team. And also back in the early 1900s, the Edmonton grads were a team that had, I believe it's like a 95% win rate. Like they were basically unstoppable, and they were a women's basketball team. And that's kind of why Edmonton was chosen to be the host city. Not that Edmonton's not a great city, but I mean, obviously, you have Calgary, you have Vancouver on the West Coast. If you wanted to move a little bit back more east, Montreal, I mean, we saw 21,000 people sell out the Bell Centre for PWHL Toronto and Montreal. So that could have been an option. But the reason why Edmonton was chosen was because it does have a rich history with basketball. But like you said, I do agree that showing that women's basketball is not just a Toronto thing because the Raptors are here. It's a Canada thing, and people showed out and showed that it is a sport that across the country people really love.
So I said before, it's a when, not if. Could it also be a how many? When the NBA first ventured up here, they went out to Vancouver, and that rather famously didn't work. But do you think there's an opportunity that it wouldn't be just Toronto, and us folks out west might be able to get a bit of a taste of it as well? Like, could we get a couple out here at one time?
I would hope so. Obviously, I don't think at once. I think they would test the waters for sure. And Toronto is a pretty safe market, and I feel like the first team just naturally probably would be Toronto, especially. I know that MLSE isn't really, they're not part of the bid. That was the whole reason why they kind of weren't in the running in the first place, and it's now going to be Larry Tannenbaum and his private group. But I think there might be a safe space for a team. But I also think, like you said, yeah, it is a team or a country that deserves more than one team, because Canada is, I mean, geographically, a huge country. People really don't realize that, you know, sometimes it takes 5 hours to fly from one province to another. You can't just hop over to Toronto to go see a WNBA game if you're living on the West Coast. And so I believe that it would be an amazing thing to have multiple teams in the country. But just knowing what Kathy Engelbert has said while she's the commissioner, I can't see her just immediately going, okay, well, we've had so much success in Canada, we're about to award them three teams. I just know that's not something she would do. But if you do see the success of one Canadian team, maybe that would persuade her a little bit more to add another, because I think Canada deserves more than one team. It shouldn't be that the entire country has to uproot and not even just cheer for one city, because I feel like you see with the Raptors and even kind of the Blue Jays, the whole country does rally around them, but more so that just people want to go. Like you said, you build it, they will come. You said, okay, we're playing in Edmonton. 16,000 people came. So I think it would be fair to have more than one team, but I just can't see the WNBA doing it all at once, knowing the process, even adding this 13th team, the Golden State, they're not playing until next year. And that's been such a process to even get that 13th team into the WNBA as well.
Let's just do whole division. Eight new teams, all the NHL markets. Saskatoon does really well at the CEBL. Let's just load this thing up. But maybe, you know, again, I'm not the business person that may need to set that one up. But when
no,
we,
I, sorry, I would like that.
Yeah, no, it'd be
fun. I was just gonna say I would like that. I agree with that absolutely. I'm in.
Yeah, there. I mean, we can't both be wrong, right? When you look at the talent level, I feel like talent wise, they could put in. Joking about eight, you could probably put close to that in now and still have relatively competitive teams. Like, the amount of very talented players who get drafted and waived immediately, or players that do get waived in place of drafted players, is, like, if it didn't have lasting impacts on these people's lives, it would be comical, the talent that gets waived every time. But, like, when we are looking at potential expansion, there are leagues that expand too fast. And the PWHL has said they don't want to do that, which is why, again, out west we don't have teams. But do you think talent-wise there is enough for, like, two, three, four of these teams, to come in right away?
Absolutely. And I mean, you hit the nail on the head with that. The downside to the WNBA, to the fact that they don't want to expand, is that there aren't enough roster spots. And people always say, you know, 144, but that's not even correct, because not every single team is carrying 12 players. Some usually carry 10 to 11 just because of salary cap capacities and whatnot. Sometimes with injuries, you're seeing maybe even 9 players, which is obviously hard on the players who are actually playing as well, because now their load management is so much higher due to the fact that there's only 9 people on their roster. But absolutely, that's the downside every year. You know, maybe draft picks 1 through 9 are kind of secure, not even 1 through 9 really, but you know, a lot of the top draft picks, sure, they're likely to make the WNBA roster and play rookie season, whatever. But as soon as it gets to the second round, it's really vast. You see a lot of these players who have been second round draft picks and made rosters and continue to play. They say that it's not a rite of passage for somebody who's drafted in the second round of the WNBA draft to actually make a team. Or you see players who have been in the league 5-6 years now, and they're being waived as well, because you have to think, okay, am I going to take this player who I know is a veteran and I know is good, or kind of invest in the future and take this rookie? And agreed, there's not enough spots currently at all, and it's nice that we're expanding, but a 13th team is only maybe 12 more roster spots, when there's probably 100 players who could easily be on that roster right now. You see so many of them, they have to go play in the EuroLeague, go to Australia, they go to different leagues around the world, because they're talented players and they still want to play. There just isn't enough spots in the WNBA, but absolutely, you could field a bunch of teams with the talent that is. Every single year you'll see on WNBA Twitter, especially, that people, as soon as somebody gets waived, it's like, man, like, this is such a good player, and this is just the system, unfortunately, that we have in the WNBA. I know Bria Beal just got waived, and she's a really great player who came out of South Carolina, and everyone was like, man, like, she's getting waived. But it's just, unfortunately, the reality of the WNBA right now is that there's not enough spots, but there is too much talent, which I guess is a good problem to have. But like you said, this is people's jobs, it's their livelihoods, and it's really not fair that it's such a competitive league that it's so hard to try and make a roster.
Telling you, 8 Canadian teams, it's 96 spots. We got this. We can do this. There is obviously of all the players who have been drafted and brought into the league, one of them is rather famous already, and that would be Caitlin Clark. We're already seeing what you would expect of Caitlin Clark highlights in the WNBA. It's the same as before, just different logos around the court and different jersey on. Anecdotally, it felt like I was seeing more WNBA preseason highlights on social media than I have in years past. What do you expect the Caitlin Clark effect to be already here in year one? I'm already seeing, like, different teams, when Indiana's coming to town, well, let's just move to the bigger arena because we sold out the tickets in 8 seconds.
Absolutely. And that was the first point I was going to make. Like, every single team who's playing the Indiana Fever is essentially moving their games. You're seeing ticket prices to watch the Indiana Fever. The get-in-the-door price is nearly $1,000. It's unreal. And like you said, too, I'm the same way. I've been covering this league for 5 years now. And preseason, I mean, in any sport, you know, preseason is preseason. But yeah, so many preseason highlights. Caitlin Clark's debut, it was very Caitlin Clark of her to hit a three-pointer for her first WNBA basket. It just couldn't raise the story any better. But yeah, I think that people are going to be investing more. But also, credit to the other teams in the league as well. You see the Las Vegas Aces. They also moved their game. They moved their game against the Indiana Pacers to T-Mobile Arena, of course. They also moved their game against the Chicago Sky. The Aces are a team that sold out. They're the first team to sell out their season ticket allotment. They sold out 5 regular season home games. People want to watch them. They're back-to-back WNBA champions. They've got Asia Wilson, Kelsey Plum, Chelsea Gray, obviously Candace Parker retired, but, you know, last year they had Candace Parker as well. They're a really good team as well. And as I said before, the Golden State team that doesn't have a single player, they just named their general manager today. They don't have a single player on that roster. They've already got 7,000 people wanting season tickets to that team. I just think the sport in general is growing and people want to watch women's sports. And when it's accessible to them, they're going to show out. But Caitlin Clark definitely does a lot for the sport as well, because there's probably a lot of people who didn't watch the WNBA or even women's basketball in general before watching her at Iowa have grown to like her. I'm sure the Indiana Fever have a lot of new fans because of her, but also she's kind of a gateway to other people as well, because you watch a game, you watch that game against Dallas, well, you see Arike Ogunbowale, who is an incredible shooter. She's a phenomenal player. She was the 2021 All-Star Game MVP. You watch her, she hit that go-ahead three-pointer that helped Dallas win that game against Indiana. And people are going to see her and go, oh my goodness, she's a phenomenal player. Maybe I want to be a Dallas Wings fan. Or even you see Aaliyah Boston. If you weren't following South Carolina when Aaliyah Boston was there, she won Rookie of the Year last year. You're going to watch her and Caitlin Clark. I'm sure it's going to be a lot of Clark to Boston buckets this season. But, you know, it kind of, Caitlin Clark opens the door for not just Indiana Fever fans or WNBA fans, but basketball in general and other teams as well.
In terms of on the court, how much of an impact is she going to have? Indiana did not get the first overall pick because they were so awesome. So how does she change the basketball fortunes for this team on the court in year one?
Yeah, I think Indiana's been a team that even last year, they had a really great season last year despite not making the playoffs compared to previous years. They're just a team that has, they've dealt with injuries, they've dealt with a lot of change in their organization. It's just been a lot. I mean, they even had the 4th overall pick 2 years ago, and then she was waived. It was a bunch of decisions like that. I think that they're finally finding their footing and things are going well for them. And obviously adding a player like Caitlin Clark, especially with Aaliyah Boston, who already made such a big impact, you know that she's going to be able to score baskets. You know that Caitlin Clark has amazing floor vision. She's going to be dishing out assists the same way she did in college. And so she's definitely going to have that impact, but also I think that bringing her into a team with a player like Aaliyah Boston, like Kelsey Mitchell, who's been a veteran of the Fever for a really long time, she's an amazing player as well. She has been one of the leaders in scoring for the team for a few years now. I think that they're all just going to mesh well. The problem is that just the WNBA is so competitive. As much as, yeah, Caitlin Clark is an amazing player, you saw that. You had to face a Dallas team that has a lot of amazing players on their own. You even look at the two teams who played in the Edmonton game. You look at the Sparks, you have obviously Canadian Keanu, she hit 3 3-pointers in that game. Derek Hamby led LA in scoring. And then you've got the Seattle Storm, who have their new core four, you know, a team that lost Sue Bird to retirement and Brianna Stewart to the New York Liberty. Now they've brought in Skylyn Diggins-Smith and Nneka Agumike to kind of add to Jewel Lloyd. And that's, they're going to be a team that's hard to beat as well. And then obviously the New York Liberty is a team that had their kind of big three with Sabrina Ionescu and Jonquil Jones and Brianna Stewart. And as I mentioned before, the Las Vegas Aces, I could go on and on and on. There's just so much talent in this league that as much as Caitlin Clark is a phenomenal player, that there's so much talent in this league that she's not going to be able to just walk in. She's absolutely going to help the Indiana Fever, but they have a few more things to figure out than just adding scoring as well, because they have to figure out how to stop all these amazing teams that seem to just be loading up on talent as well.
Shifting gears to the NBA, if I remember correctly, the Phoenix Suns are a team that you follow rather closely. That went well in the first round. What can the I guess what should the Suns do, and what can they do this offseason?
Oh my goodness! The thing with my whole thing with the Phoenix Suns is that it seems like as much as they're constantly, it looks like, bringing in talent, they just don't have a lot of depth. In my opinion, that was the whole thing. Even when they brought in Chris Paul, and also, you know, you have a player like Devin Booker who, yeah, it's really great when Devin Booker's dropping 47 points, but then when he's having a stinker and going like 2 of 12 on the floor, not contributing anything, there's nothing going on. And especially a player like Bradley Beal, who Bradley Beal's still a good player. Of course, he's not prime Bradley Beal, but he's still a good player. Kevin Durant as well, and I feel like Kevin Durant takes a lot of the flack in these things because he's gone from OKC to Golden State to Brooklyn to now the Suns and has not had the playoff success he's wanted. But I think their biggest thing is they keep trying to take the approach of, okay, well, if we have this really great starting five, then we should win a ton of basketball games. But you need that depth. I think back to even the Raptors 5 years ago when they won that NBA title, and we know we're very far from that these days, but going back to the golden days, the whole thing was the bench mob. The reason the Raptors did so well, yeah, of course you have Kawhi Leonard, but you had that bench mob who was incredible, had the most points in the league from the bench. That matters so much because, yeah, you're going to have some players who are playing 40-plus minutes per game, of course. That's the sport. You saw Tom Thibodeau the other day when people asked if he was thinking about taking Josh Hart out, and he was like, no, it was a thought. I let the thought pass. I'm not taking Josh Hart out of the game. But you need depth, and I think that's the Suns' biggest problem is that they simply just don't have really good depth, and that's what bit them in the end.
Another thing that probably came back to bite them is running into the next Michael Jordan, apparently. Anthony Edwards just looks out of his mind, unbelievable, and like the next big superstar. Do you have those high of aspirations for him? And just in general, these NBA playoffs have been kind of awesome the last little bit, and seems like we're setting up for more awesomeness. What's your excitement level as we continue on in the postseason?
Yeah, I'm absolutely loving this, and I think that Anthony Edwards is phenomenal. I've been a big Ant fan for a long time. I remember when he got drafted, and people were kind of shocked that he went first overall. They didn't think that maybe he should have gone first overall, but I've been an Ant fan for a really long time. I think he's great, and the Timberwolves have been kind of waiting for this version of him. If you think he's only got drafted in 2020, he's still 22 years old. He's a young guy, but doing phenomenal, obviously winning Game one against Denver is huge. Going off for 43 points in 42 minutes, I think he's incredible. And yeah, the playoffs in general, I think that NBA playoffs are always super exciting in my opinion. And I know I'm a basketball fan, so I'm obviously going to be a little bit biased there. But you see the OKC Thunder, they swept the Pelicans. They're a really fun team. And they're also play the Mavs now. So, okay, what's your answer for Luka Doncic? Obviously, Celtics Cavaliers. Cavaliers had to go to seven against the Magic. And I like the Magic, and I think they're a fun team, but I think the Cavs maybe should have taken that in six, possibly. But they're playing the Celtics now. Okay, well, you saw the Celtics. Yes, they won that series 4-1 against the Heat, but that game that they lost against the Heat, they did not look very good. And the Celtics have some weaknesses, so you'll see the Cavs exposing that. And then Pacers-Knicks as well. The Knicks have been such a phenomenal team, fun team, and I think a lot of people are on the Knicks bandwagon because of the fact they took out the 76ers, and everybody hates the 76ers. But then you also look on the Pacers side, and they took out the Bucks. And yes, you know, Doc Rivers and the Bucks is a whole other storyline, and you could go down a rabbit hole of that. And I know that dealt with injuries and whatever, but taking out the Bucks is a huge thing as well. So I think that Pacers-Knicks is going to be a fun series as well. And I know I've said every single one of these is going to be fun, but I truly believe that because they're eight really good teams. They're there for a reason, but I'm just very excited, and I like a lot of the matchup. There's two number one seeds, two number two seeds, and then you've got some lower five, six seeds in there. So I think it'll be really fun to watch.
One more before you go. I believe the last time you and I got to chat on here was just after the Australian Grand Prix when Sainz won. Now we're talking here after the always prestigious Crypto.com Miami Grand Prix, and Lando Norris comes away with the win. If I were able to come back here on a fill-in basis every Monday and we had you on, I think we could really have a race on our hands for a top spot in the driver's title in Formula One.
Oh, absolutely. That was such a fun race. And the thing is, too, you know, we're aware, we follow motorsport, we're aware that if nothing happens to Max Verstappen, he is most likely going to win a race. Absolutely. Australia, if he didn't DNF, would he have won that race? Probably. But in this case, too, if there was no safety car, if you want to talk safety car and Max Verstappen, there's a certain race in 2021 that we could all go to and talk about. So I just want to say Max Verstappen has benefited off of safety cars as well. I even think I was at the Las Vegas Grand Prix, and there was a safety car in the Las Vegas Grand Prix that kind of screwed Charles over, and then Max overtook, and that was a whole thing. But yeah, Lando, the car was phenomenal. McLaren had a bunch of upgrades going into this weekend, and they knew that. And it's kind of the same as last season. They did it a lot earlier this year. This is great, but you remember last season, the first half of the season, that McLaren car was a tractor. It was horrible. They weren't producing anything. And then they had all their summer upgrades, and the car was driving phenomenally. And yesterday was the same thing. There was upgrades to the car. Even Oscar said, as much as he had that unfortunate incident with Carlos Sainz, he said the car was great, the team was great. I don't want my results to take away from Lando or the team because everything was perfect this weekend. And Lando said the same thing. The car was phenomenal. The strategy was phenomenal. You saw they took advantage of that safety car. He said, I'm just going to keep driving. He almost lapped the back of the grid, which doesn't seem that hard these days when the Williams and the Haases are still not scoring any points. But, you know, it was just, it was so fun. And it's been such a long time coming for Lando. You've seen him all these P3s and so many P2s, and you knew it was just coming. And yeah, sure, the safety car gave him a bit of an advantage, but by the end, he had a 7-second gap to Max. He was holding the pace. That's the problem with a lot of these cars. Max gets behind them and they don't defend and they lose their pace. Lando didn't do that, and it was such a well-deserved P1, and I was so, so, so happy for him.
Haley, could do this all day. This was a blast. Thank you so much for doing this, and we'll talk again soon after someone else wins a Formula One race.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure, Peter. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. There is Haley McGoldrick from Sportsnet.ca, as you discovered there, covering basically everything for the website. You can find her on social media at Goldie on Sports. We will take a break. When we come back, I'm frustrated with the Toronto Blue Jays. You're frustrated about the Toronto Blue Jays. We're all frustrated about the Toronto Blue Jays. Let's discuss that, plus a little bit more from the hockey world as Hour 2 continues here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Just a well-oiled machine. Sportsnet today, Sportsnet 960 The Fan. I'm Peter Klein, that is Shan, as we put a bow on this one here today. Got some playoff puck on your airways tonight. Boston taking on Florida. 6 o'clock start. We'll have it for you here after Flames Talk on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. We'll tee that one up here in a little bit. We are coming to you from the DL Basement Systems downtown studio. For Doug Lacey's Basement Systems, we are your local experts for basement waterproofing, sump pumps, crawl spaces, foundation repair, and radon mitigation. We are all things basement-y. Visit dlbasementsystemscalgary.com. There were just a bunch of people in the lobby. Like I said to you, maybe I shouldn't be admitting this. I don't know who any of them were.
Yeah.
But they all looked important.
They did.
And they were like at various times all looking in here. And like we are definitely in a zoo when like yeah. They're just what are those silly baboons talking about in there right now?
We're
like
just dancing to the intro music.
Yeah, like, exactly. Oh. Yeah. Yeah. I'm making weird jokes in the break and all of these things. Nothing is working and Cam's blaming it all on everyone else. Anyway, Cam's our producer. That's Shan.
He does that often, by the way.
No, he totally does. Yeah, no, I've noticed that.
It drives me kind of nuts. Yeah, never, ever, ever.
Very much like a Toronto Maple Leaf player. Like, yeah. Oh, no, not my fault. Like, we got close.
Do you know Cam used to be a big fan of the Leafs?
Really?
Yeah.
Cam.
Yeah.
It's rough.
How dare you?
I had to put that out there.
God, I mean, that
just had to oust me like that, Shan.
You say that, it explains so much, though. Right?
It does. Like it does.
Yeah, it just, like, there was this one thing, and it just, like, all these lines were pointing in one direction, and you couldn't really figure out where, and then it all just gets locked into former Leaf fan.
Blaming things on other people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah just.
It's the power play or something.
General awfulness.
Ouch.
I do want to draw attention to some things here. As I'm saying this, I have to. I'm having some trouble with my phone. So give me 1 second. Okay. So you brought my attention to Oliver Shillington Instagram post from a couple hours ago. Definitely go follow him and all of that. But I want to read what he posted here. He said, firstly, I want to express my sincere gratitude to you, my fans, my family, and my friends for being with me throughout my journey. Over the last 2 years, I've begun the journey of dismantling trauma from my past that have been present since my childhood, trauma that I myself didn't know was there because I did not have the tools to face them. I am thankful for the trust given to me by you, my fans, you, my family, you, my friends, my team, and the whole Calgary Flames organization to go on this journey and knowing I will come back better for it. Lastly, if there is anyone out there with your mental health, struggling with your mental health, sorry, this message is for you. I urge you to seek help and to work through it. In doing this, you will hopefully, just like me, find peace and be able to get back to the things you cherish in life. For me, that is hockey. I'm back. That from Oliver Shillington just a couple hours ago. Just an amazing message. And I can't begin to process what his journey has been like to get back to the NHL. But I am so happy that he is back. I hope that it is a longer term stay in Calgary, that there is obviously contract negotiations that have to be done with that player now as we head toward the offseason. But one of the obvious bright spots of this year was that dude coming back and having an impact on this hockey team.
Well, first time I read that post chills. And then when you read it again, chills. Because it's such a powerful thing. It really is. And Oliver Shillington is in the best hockey league in the world. And he's proven he had a really good season a couple years ago. And he's proven that he can be this guy. And for him to step away and not, we didn't know what was going on. And for him to share that and encourage people to reach out. It's really powerful. It's something that that it's impressive. It's impressive for him to come out and say that. Yeah. And it's as impressive as it is for him to come back this season. So yeah, that post is pretty special and absolutely agree with the message. It's something that, you know, and he's the Masterton Trophy nominee for the Flames and a finalist this year and for absolute good reason.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I've had my own stuff with mental health. I've talked about it on these airwaves a number of different times. And Shillington, another example that mental health problems don't necessarily care about your bank account or social status or anything like that. So if you are out there and thinking, oh, if I just get this, I'll be better. If I just get that, I'll be better. For me, you jump over hurdle after hurdle after hurdle. And eventually you realize, you know, these are just going to keep coming. Maybe I should deal with the root problem of all of this. So a great message there from Oliver Shillington. No easy way of transitioning out of that into anything in the silly sports world, but we'll do it anyway. Canada beats the U.S. to win gold at the IIHF U18. This one obviously got a lot of notoriety as T.J. Kinla ends up playing a big factor. Yeah, very rarely discussed. T.J. Kinla getting playing a very big part in Canada coming away with that. There's a picture of him with his dad in the background, which is just an unbelievable moment. And then you think of all of the different things involved with that kid. We got the draft lottery coming up tomorrow. That feels like a very important day around these parts. I think this draft is so interesting from a Flame standpoint for a number of different reasons. A, they just have a lot of picks. Like Conroy basically went out and acquired a whole other draft this year. But the Ginla conversation is going to be very fascinating. Obviously, they have a touch of intel with the player. Obviously, there is quite a bit of a nostalgic type feel just to see that name on a Flames jersey again. And so I think it's going to be really interesting, depending on where the Flames end up. Is he still there coming off of a just terrific tournament here? If he is still there and not necessarily best player available, what do the Flames end up doing? I think that this is such a unique, interesting storyline, because this isn't, with all due respect, Bronny and the LA Lakers and just, oh yeah, a team can just waste a second round pick on him and just see if LeBron will actually come. This is a kid who by all accounts is going to be a legitimate NHL player. Is he going to be legitimate enough that you pick him where the Flames are drafting? Does that matter because of the nostalgia and all of that? It is endlessly fascinating to me, this discussion this year.
Absolutely. I mean, there is a good chance now, after what we've seen in the last, I'd say, month and a half from T.J. Kinla, that with the Flames drafting in ninth, he could be picked before. And I don't think that was something we even considered. Probably expected him to be like a 15th overall pick earlier on in the season. It's like, all right, well, the Flames, you know, they might have to reach for him. No, like, if he falls to ninth, I have a hard time seeing how he's not the best player available.
Yeah.
And this, you know, you talk about this draft being super interesting. It is, because there are so many defensemen. And you can talk about what the needs are for the Calgary Flames and their prospect pool, but they picked up a lot of defensemen this year, and I think it would be a mistake to draft anything but a forward. And there are so many defensemen that are going to go before whoever the Flames draft, right?
Yep.
You might get the second, third, or fourth best forward in the draft at ninth overall.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fascinating to me. So, you know what? The T.J. Kinla story is so cool. It would be incredible if he came to Calgary. And at this point, I don't think at nine it's going to be a reach at all.
No, I don't think so either. There was a time where it felt like it would be a reach, but just a bit of a reach.
Yeah.
And enough that you kind of do it anyway.
Uh-huh.
And if he is there and they pick someone else, that is going to be a comparison for forever. The same way, like, Jankowski Olli Mata was a discussion for forever, and then Mata had a baller rookie season and kind of fizzled out after that. But now Jankowski is good again, which is weird. But that is going to be such a discussed thing. We'll have a lot more draft talk coming up on the show tomorrow, as it is the draft lottery. And that's right, you're stuck with me for one more day. I mentioned before, I want to tee up Boston against Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations, Boston. You got past the Leafs. I think we made it very clear what we think of the Leafs in that first segment. I think this could be a fun series. I do see a world where Florida just kicks the bleep out of these guys. Like, just absolutely annihilates Boston. I think Boston has a tendency to not really have that urgency that you need. I thought that they played really poorly in 2.5 games against the Leafs and then woke up when Toronto scored in game 7 there. But I think Florida is considerably more talented. Swayman's good. Bobrovsky's awesome. I don't know what box checks off in Boston's advantage to give them this series over the Panthers.
Well, and we heard Luke Fox talk about it earlier on this show. Boston's running with Pavel Zacha and Charlie Coyle as their top centers.
Like, yeah.
And we saw what Florida did to Tampa Bay. Tampa is a team that is certainly holding on to the championship pedigree that they rightfully earned.
Yeah.
But they lost quite a few players. And it's the exact same thing with Boston.
Yeah.
Boston put up a decent showing against the Leafs. It didn't look like Boston was a world beater. And I agree. Like, this very well could be over in 5 games. Like, I wouldn't even be shocked. I would be shocked if it goes 7, and I'd be absolutely shocked if the Bruins lose. Like, I have all my faith in all my cards are for Florida this round, honestly. Like, I think Florida is absolutely pushing to be the best team in the East. You can talk about the Rangers, you can talk about the Hurricanes, and sure, there's a couple other candidates, but I think Florida is the best team to come out of the East, and they are bullies. They are absolute bullies. They're mean and they're really good. It's a scary team. They have the forwards, absolutely the goaltending, the defense is really good too. It's a very scary team, and I think they could absolutely win the East.
Yeah, like we talked before about the Panthers, or sorry, about the NHL and like talented grit. That's basically the entire foundation that Florida is built on. And like they were talking on Merrick's show before we came on about how Barkov has just kind of playing the role of Patrice Bergeron is Barkov. Like, he has been that type of a dude for this Panthers team. And like they were saying as that series of Tampa Bay went along, like Tkachuk, oh, he's kind of quiet in this series. Point in every game.
Yep.
Like, he, even when he is not being that guy, he is still impacting this team. And he, admittedly, coming out of Calgary, he had some growing up to do. Because in that last series, that last playoff, the whole time, whether it was the Dallas series or the Edmonton one, he was going out there specifically to be a jackass.
Yep.
Like, he was going out there with the intent of, I'm just going to be that annoying guy. And it took him completely out of his game. And he has now kind of meshed it all together in one nice round form of a complete player. And that has turned into a really, really strong showing for this entire Florida Panthers team.
Absolutely. I mean, what Matthew Tkachuk has turned into in Florida is something. And I mean, you know what? Maybe it hurts a little bit, but at the same time, you watch him, you're like, ah, this guy again. He's just doing it again. But yeah, you're right. It's turned into a complete package where he'll distract you, take you off the game, but he's not going to take that many dumb penalties, or at least as many as he used to. He's so effective.
Yeah.
He is so effective. He was the missing piece that Florida team needed. And it's, you're right. Like, you talk about Barkov. The Barkov-Tkachuk dynamic is so interesting.
Oh, yeah.
I think maybe as far apart as two players could be, but they both are high-impact players. But then you look down the lineup. Carter Verhaeghe seems to score every big goal in Florida Panthers history.
Mm-hmm.
And you have Sam Reinhart blew up this year. I mean, what a contract year. But, like, this Florida team is all round, and they have a few players that love the Matthew Tkachuk role. So it's like Nick Cousins is like the worst, but
yes,
he does it and he gets under your skin. Ryan Lomberg, do I ever miss that guy in Calgary? He's hilarious. So yeah, this Florida, I mean, Matthew Tkachuk being the main focus there, it's just, they're just mean.
Looking at the odds, Florida Panthers to win the series 4-1 is +400.
Wow.
Really interesting to me. It's like, oh, that's maybe a bit of a sprinkle on that one.
Yeah.
Also, if you want to get super specific, Florida to win games 1 and 2, Boston game 3, Florida game 4 and 5 is +1600 right now. If you want to get super degenerate about all of that,
I feel like those odds are still low.
Yeah, for a 5-game parlay, that does seem a little low for sure. But you like to dabble a little bit. And you see +1600 there, it looks nice, even though you are putting 5 games together. We kind of touched on Rangers against Carolina in the last one. The one other thing I do want to say about that, as we just kind of go, just kind of bouncing around the whole league. A lot of people, and I fall into this too, when you see a team that is good on the power play, you immediately think, oh, well, that's not going to happen in the playoffs. Put the whistles away in the playoffs. Power play isn't going to mean a thing. Rangers are going to fall apart. Doesn't seem to matter for them. That power play is insane. The first power play goal they scored, they had 4 passes that got it to the front of the goal. Each pass took a defender out of position.
Yeah.
It was just textbook how they did. Pass along the wall, top guy goes out, he's now out of position. Throw it across, another guy goes out, he's now out of position. Throw it down, dude vacates the front of the goal. So now we throw it across, other guy comes out, and now you're just left with a guy wide open. It was art how they were able to do that. And yes, maybe you're not getting six power plays a game. A, they have been calling more penalties in the playoffs now than they used to. Like, yeah. It is not just the wild, wild west where you can go out there and just throw your stick like a trident and not get a penalty for it. They are going to call penalties.
Yeah.
And I think that taking advantage of those is so much more important now. So, yeah, maybe you don't have a chance to go 4-for-8 in a game. But if you go 2-for-3, that is a difference maker. We saw it in the Boston-Toronto series. Toronto couldn't, Boston could. Series. Done. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to see it in with the Rangers in Carolina. A good power play, A, doesn't mean they suck 5-on-5, but it can make or break in a couple of games. And when everyone is as tight as they are, I think that is so important now. Oh, the important people are back.
Yeah, they're
all
back.
Looking.
I'm actually kind of scared now.
I straight made eye contact with someone out there. But that I think that, those types of things are such difference makers in series where everything is so tight.
Well, we saw it. It was the number one problem for the LA Kings against the Edmonton Oilers. It really was.
Yeah.
It changed the trajectory of the series. It changed the trajectory of games, and LA didn't really have a chance. And to be fair, they were taking some stupid penalties too. I wouldn't say they were silly touch penalties, but yeah, you're right. The power play absolutely changes the course of a game. And you talk about that. You go 1-for-2, you go 2-for-3. We've seen a lot of low scoring games in these playoffs. And I know it's, you know, it gets tighter defensively. Absolutely. But that Rangers power play, you're right. You talk about the Rangers, you talk about the Oilers, and there are a couple other teams that have ridiculous power plays, but it can absolutely be the difference maker in a round one and a round two. And then, you know, you get to round three and everyone's got a good power play. So if you're Carolina, you got to be careful with what the Rangers were able to do to you in game one. I don't want to say it's crazy to say that they're running away. It's just like the Rangers looked like a better team. They really did.
Yeah, they really, really did. And that goaltending question we talked about in hour one, still just like waves like a big white flag or red flag. Sorry.
Yeah.
Like your Lululemon bag in here right now. let's shift gears now to the sport of baseball. As the Toronto Blue Jays, you can tell me the first part of the season was just a ridiculously difficult schedule. Although Houston doesn't look like the tough beat that we thought they were at the beginning of the year, but it was a challenging schedule to start the year, for sure, for this Blue Jays team. That goes out the window when you drop 2-of-3 to the Nationals, which is a funny joke for the 8 people who remember. Nice.
Yeah.
Funny joke for the 8 people who remember when they spelt the names on the jerseys wrong that one time. But this is a major problem. And I tend to not be big push-the-panic-button guy. Just in general, especially with baseball. Like, there's still 100 games to go, more than 100 games to go in this season. But where I do think you are allowed to push the panic button and to worry is when you had a problem last season, you don't address that problem going into the year. Everyone knows it's going to be a problem to start the season, and then it's a problem. At that point, I feel like we have checked enough boxes that we can say, yeah, you know what? Maybe this team just can't hit. And right now, they are in the bottom 2 or 3 in the league in run scoring this year. And it doesn't feel like we are on game 35 this season. It feels like we're on game 197 of last year.
I feel like I'm like 110 years old watching all these games. Mm-hmm. It's actually aged me because it's been that bad. You're right.
Which is also the general demographic for baseball these days. But, I don't understand. I don't understand how Bo and Vlad just suck now.
Ugh.
And I do think odds are those guys are going to come out of it. There is a chance that Springer is just kind of this now, which is he'll come up with a couple of big hits every now and then and everything will be fine. But I think you have to have a conversation with him. Like, look, I don't know if you go home every day, look yourself in the mirror and be like, yeah, you know what? Killed it today. But it's not going well. Can we put you anywhere else in the lineup? Turner could bat one, although that does kind of take away from, well, he's our RBI guy. But you'd figure that out later. Varsho could bat number one, which has been inexplicable this season. I do think Bo and Vlad get going, but everything else has kind of been like, you've got best case scenario out of Varsho, out of Biggio, and out of Schneider, and still nothing. And so I am really concerned about this team because the offense isn't going. And I don't know where, enough improvement comes where this is going to be a team that can score enough runs to get into the playoffs again.
I'm going to talk from one perspective that is maybe not the smartest, but just in terms of an entertainment standpoint, this is brutal.
It's a tough watch.
It is brutal. And you know, you talk about the team a couple of years ago with, we had Teoscar Hernandez, you had Lourdes Gurriel, like you had all these guys. I was at the game in Toronto against the Mariners a couple of years ago in the wild card round where they had the 8-1 lead and they blew it.
Yeah.
And at least there was offense, man. There's nothing now. And yeah, the pitching is incredible. Absolutely. Like, Kevin Gausman had a rough start, whatever. Barrios has been a freak to start this year. Kikuchi looks good. And Yariel Rodriguez has looked pretty good. Bassett's been whatever. But the pitching and the defense is not a concern at all. You're not going to win baseball games if you don't score. You can't, like, there was a period from April 6th up until the end of April. I think it was April 28th. They hadn't scored more than 5 runs in a game. So, yeah, it's a tough watch, absolutely. But these are, like, you're playing against teams like the Nationals, who are as average as can be, as below average as can be.
Yeah.
And they tore you to pieces, like, really. So this Jays team is a mess. And that, like, imagine where the Jays are without Justin Turner right now, which is crazy to say.
Yeah. I just don't get how you get from there. Right. Like you said, like, it was Teoscar, it was Lourdes, it was all of those guys. And it felt like, okay, this one really stung. But, like, when Vlad said last year was the trailer, this year is the movie, I believed that.
I did too.
Because you could see it. Like, yes, Vlad Guerrero Jr. is, like, I think he's still young. Well, he's always going to be if he is now. Younger than Adley Rutschman, who is this young prospect who has just come on in the last couple of years. And you have Bo Bichette, who is this just unbelievable hitting talent. And now, like, they trade Teoscar for Eric Swanson, who can't get an out right now. And I understand, like, he had some real stuff going on
for sure
in spring training. And now he's also battling back from an injury. But now you have a manager who's throwing him out there in leverage for no good gosh darn reason. And so that's awesome. So you get that away. It's like, okay, well, Teoscar maybe wouldn't have signed here in the offseason. So you can kind of understand, oh, what's that? Gabriel Moreno and Lourdes Gurriel Jr. for Dalton Varsho. And as well as Varsho is playing, it was so frustrating to see Lourdes and Moreno to a certain extent as well do the exact thing Toronto was lacking against the Minnesota Twins. And so, yeah, you can go, we're going to be a pitching and defense team, which is fine, but you still have to score enough runs to win games. And now the pitching is falling off. Like, Gausman, I think, is fine.
Yeah.
Bassett, I do think we'll get there. Kikuchi and Barrios have been good, and I worry that Barrios might fall off a touch.
Yeah.
But Ben Nicholson-Smith tweeted out the other day, Blue Jays bullpen this year, ERA 30th among 30 MLB teams, by the way. FIP, which is a advanced stat, fielding independent pitching, 30th. Home runs per nine inning, 30th. Strikeout to walk ratio, 25th. So they barely score any runs, and when it's time to hold on to the lead that they have with the barely any runs, they are getting just obliterated.
It's really, like, and you know what? I hate to bury Swanson, because you're right. He went through a lot of stuff going before the season, didn't get a good training camp. Like, that was ugly, but you're right. John Schneider's putting him in high-pressure situations where they need an out, right? It's not like he was eased into it. And, yeah you know, I didn't know the stats were that bad, because it actually can't get any worse than that when you're 30th in the league. But
right.
But with that being said, like, it has looked awful. Yep. It has. And some of the guys that you expected, like, the one guy I can say has been fine is Jimmy Garcia.
Yep.
And he's hurt right now.
Right,
so
great.
It is a complete disaster in Toronto, and I think we're getting to the territory, especially with the contracts of Vladdy and Bichette ending in a couple years. Like, change needs to be made, and I think it might start with John Schneider.
And no, I do think Schneider is coaching for his job right now, and I don't know what he can do to get the nose up on that. And I do think that this team's performance this year dictates if Atkins has a job going into next year as well. And that's why I do think that, like, obviously the interest with Shohei was legitimate, and they were making that real push to get there, because they know big things need to happen here. Mm-hmm. And I wanted them to be in on a guy like Arias that San Diego did. Now the Padres prospect wise kind of overpaid on that, but still they can't just wait around for the deadline to fix this. They need to be as aggressive as they were a couple of years ago when they went out and got Richards and got Simber and completely redid the bullpen in the one pandemic season that helped eventually get them close to the postseason. So tune into your Blue Jays baseball throughout the season here on Sportsnet.
Yep.
But no, it just it has been very frustrating with this Toronto team all season long. All right, that is going to do it for the program today. You all have been a blast to chat with. That's Shan, that is Cam in the other room, blaming everything on everyone else, but also doing a really good job. Thank you all so much. We'll be back tomorrow leading into the draft lottery. It is going to be a ton of fun. And as we go out, we just vented about the Blue Jays. Let's tell you a little bit more specifically of why we're so frustrated in today's Blue Jays report. That I need to play. One sec. Hold on. Remember when I said that today's Blue Jays report? Now, today's Blue Jays report.
Time now for the Jays report on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Shan Vergee.
Yeah, it's not really getting much better for the Toronto Blue Jays. Let's look back at a three-game set against the Washington Nationals. Friday night's game had tons of bounce-back potential with Patrick Corbin on the mound for the Nats. He's had a rough start to the season, had a rough start to game one as well. In the second inning, Dalton Varsho hit a two-run double, and George Springer hit a sacrifice fly to give the Jays an early 3-0 lead. Yusei Kikuchi pitched six innings with one run allowed and seven strikeouts, but Eric Swanson came into the game, and he blew it. Not a single out recorded for Swanson, and a Luis Garcia three-run shot ended the night. To be fair to Swanson, it didn't matter as the Jays didn't score after the second inning and dropped Game 1 9-3. Game 2 was better for the Jays. It helped that the Nationals started the game with a comedy of errors, missing tags, throwing balls out of play, and letting the Jays take free bases. After the first, it was 4-0 Toronto. In the bottom of the seventh, CJ Abrams and Nick Senzel picked up an RBI each, and it was 4-2. But this first home run of the year came at the perfect time.
Kevin Kiermaier steps to the plate. Law delivers to him. Kiermaier sends it deep into the gap, and it's actually going to hit the top of the wall. It's going to be a home run for Kevin Kiermaier as he gave that thing a ride.
The Jays would hold off the Nats to win 6-3 in Game 2. It was a much-needed gem from Kevin Gausman, who got through over five innings with just three hits, eight strikeouts, and no earned runs. Truthfully, Game 3 was a disaster. Alek Manoah got the call-up from AAA, and it wasn't great. He loaded the bases in the first inning, but got out of the jam with just one run of damage. The Jays would score on an error and would load the bases for Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
The 2-1 pitch. And Guerrero gets underneath one, launches this thing to left field, and it is gone. 20 rows deep on a grand slam for Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Isaiah Kiner-Falefa would add another run to make it 6-1 for the Jays in the third. And here's where it blew up. Luis Garcia hit a solo bomb in the third and then came right back in the fourth to bring two more home with a single. And in the fourth with two men on, Jesse Winker to the plate.
As he stands in and stares down Manoah, the 3-2 pitch. And he sends this one towards the wall, and it's gone. In right field, a three-run shot has given Washington the lead.
The Nats took the lead there, and then the game was back and forth until the end. Toronto would go up 8-7, but then the defense fell apart, and the Nationals would finish with an 11-8 win in the final game of the series. Alek Manoah finished with six earned runs, six strikeouts, and four walks with a 13.5 ERA. It's an off day for the Jays, and they'll be back at it tomorrow with a series in Philly with the Phillies. We'll talk to you tomorrow. I'm Shan Vergee, and that was your Jays report.
Catch the Blue Jays all season long, right here on Calgary's home of the Blue Jays, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.